Ja, doe even je riedeltje.
Je mag beginnen.
Oké. Okay.
Birth of Magenta Foundation.
The Birth of Magenta. Now, initially it was Magenta, later on we became a foundation. Because we had to be a legal entity. So, I went with my father on a trip to Poland to visit the camps, where he's a survivor of Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, this was in 1992, sometime in October, I think. And around that time, or a little bit earlier in that year, there were attacks in Germany on a refugee center and on a house where five Turkish people from one family died in a fire that was set by neo-Nazis. Also, the refugee center went up in flames. And the German police couldn't find any of the perpetrators. So we felt we had to do something, particularly after my trip to Poland, that was like a thing. Because the slogan of the Auschwitz Committee is never again.
Never again.
But in reality, it's every day in different forms. So we decided we wanted to organize a demonstration under the slogan never again. And we were just two private people. However, both of us had in different ways experience with organizing stuff. So we set out to work, and then a friend that we met through the Green Party, Jelle van der Meulen, who had some kind of little company. So he had an office with a fax, very important because internet really wasn't a thing in 1992. So he said, well, come and sit with me in the office. And then, you know, you have all the stuff you need to make a press release and all that. My brother wrote the text for a poster to call for people to come to the demonstration. And then a graphic designer from a Dutch magazine, the Nieuwe Revue, made the design, which became our hostile. It's a black background and white lettering. And then another friend who was a printer photocopied on his professional photocopier the poster, but because it has such a big black top, he burned through his copier in the end. But hey, never mind. Shit happens. So anyway, we were sitting in that office, and after about 2 hours or so, because Ronald and me, we would squabble along, you know, and discuss things with each other. So Jelle van der Meulen took his keys, gave it to us and said, I'm going home, because I think you got a bit tired of us. And anyway, so we were calling with press people. And then you say, well, my name is Suzette Bronckhorst, blah, 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 this is what we're organizing. They said, yeah, but who are you? As in, what organization do you represent? So we had to come up with a name. And I worked with a magazine, and this is the time before the computer, so you would make color sheets on top of whatever page you were designing. And the dominant color was magenta. It's a color that gives, in itself, it's a kind of bright pink, but also it gives depth to every other color. So it's a color made of many colors, but then again, a lot of colors have that problem. Mm-hmm. So that's how magenta came as a name, because we needed to get the media attention.
Yes.
The news on Radio 1 in Netherlands took it very serious, because we said you can help this by publishing this in your medium. So every hour on the hour on the news broadcast, they talked about the demonstration, the time it would start, and where it was. That was like, great. What? It was a great thing.
A surprise, kind of.
Yeah, you sent a press release and saying you can help this by publishing this in your medium. And then the national news broadcast broadcasts this every hour.
Every hour.
You know, wow.
How can?
It really was wow.
Yes.
Well, I think it was... It is also a sign of the times, huh? Because these days people are ashamed to be anti-racist.
Yes.
And there's so many complications that this would never happen now. But it happened then. And so the demonstration was on a Sunday, the 29th of November.
Which we are? Which year?
1992. And everybody was meeting on the Jonas Daniel Meyerplein, which doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people. In Dutch history, it's a heavy spot. It's the square in front of the Portuguese synagogue. And there's also a statue of somebody that worked in the docks during the war, because there was the one thing that happened in the war was because there were a lot of razzias against Jews, and then the people of the public transport and the people from the harbor, the working in the docks, organized a strike to protest this. So every year on the day of the strike, which was in February sometime, they have a commemorative meeting that is on that square. So anyway, we were standing there and seeing that there were a few hundred people. Wow, big deal. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw a Caribbean show and drum band that arrived. So they wanted to participate, but they didn't want to be in front of the people, but they wanted to be in the middle somewhere. So, okay, fine. There was a reporter from the radio live, and that was really funny. It's the first time I think Ronald and I realized that we really were part of each other's mind almost. Because he asked, "So where are you from?" Of course, meaning what organization, whatever. And Ronald and me responded at the same time by saying we're from our mothers. And then the reporter said, "Oh, you agreed upon that beforehand." And no, sir, it's a biological fact. Okay, so we start walking with the drum band in the middle, and in front of us there's two police horses. One horse I hold dearly, we call it the Samba horse.
Samba.
Yeah, like the dance, because it looked like he was, you know, a professional, a horse that in the Olympic sports, dressure, they called it, because he was walking on the rhythm of the drum band. Really nice. So we start walking, and then you come across a bridge next to City Hall, and the reporter said, "Look behind you." And there were 5,000 people behind us. That was blew our mind. So anyway, we went on our walk, and about halfway through, the whole thing came to a stop, and we didn't understand. Because there was from the police side, of course, there's a commander with his command bus that stopped, and not for any reason other than the wife of Commissioner Brewster came to give him his lunch. So, and then we went on. And it was such an empowering experience, because we weren't involved in any of the arguments that were taking place in the movement as a whole, different organizations. Like a Jewish organization had a big trouble with the organization that was fighting for Moroccan migrants, but they both were under the poster to support it. Because nobody had a beef with us. And so after the demonstration, we were like, God, what do we, you know, we have to do something with this. Because we're onto something. By the way, we never organized a demonstration again. It's the one and only demonstration we ever organized. And then we got, in all this time, we met Virus Azarouche, at the time director of the Migrant Support Institute of Amsterdam. So he invited us to his office, and then he had set out on a piece of paper, well, and then you become a legal entity. So I would suggest you become a foundation, and then, and once you are that, you can get maybe a subsidized, you know, to go along. So we have two grandfathers, in a way. One is Firouz, by showing us the way to become a legal entity. And the other one is Jelle van der Meulen, who first gave us an office space to work in. And so we went on from there and became a legal entity, Stichting Magenta, the Magenta Foundation.
For 93?
Yeah, in 93, yeah. It became official.
Okay.
But that first demonstration, wow. That really was something.
It's like a founding event.
Yes, but accidental. Like a lot of things we did from, because something had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of got out of hand all the time.
And because at this time, there is when did you meet each other, Ronald and I?
We met each other earlier that year. Well, so I was of the Green Party in Amsterdam. That was founded by Roel van Duin, who was a famous provo. And he was a city council member. And we had a members meeting in City Hall. And Ronald was there, sitting right across the room. And he was rolling a cigarette. So I said, you know you can't smoke here. He said, yeah, I'm just rolling it. So anyway, and then we used to talk on the phone for hours and stuff. And at that time, it was called the year of the Barcelona Olympics. In Amsterdam, we have an Olympic stadium, because we once organized the Olympic Games, and they wanted to break it down. And Ronald and a lot of people actually were against it, and they were trying to stop that from happening. So what they did, they lit the Olympic flame in Amsterdam at the same time it happened in Barcelona. And of course there was a lot of press, so Ronald asked me to be on the ground to organize that people would go up, you know, to speak to them from the marathon tower where the Olympic flame was lit. After that was over, we went to have a drink on the terrace, and then we became a couple. Mm. But it was like so natural.
But it is this interesting picture from Roel and other people on
in
the top.
On
yes.
The tower.
Yes.
Yes. And also one of the reasons we were sitting on the terrace, that one of these guys was a pyrotechnician, and another guy and Ronald were in that tower. So upon leaving the tower, one of the two others poured gasoline over the fire. Not a very good thing to do. So we were also sitting on the terrace to keep an eye on it and see that it wouldn't burn down the entire tower, which didn't happen in the end. So that was okay.
Sipping your coffee and looking back at
the action.
I
did something worse.
Mm.
I'm a fire eater.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my colorful life, I also went to clown school in the Netherlands during the Festival of Fools. So, and I'm especially good at spitting fire.
Oh, yes.
So, and the way you do that is like a trumpet player. So you have the flammable liquids, and then you squirt it out like into a mist. So I was demonstrating that. Unfortunately, I used a drink called Pisang Ambon, which is really sticky banana liqueur. So I sprayed half the terrace with the sticky shit. Oh, okay.
And this was this evening you became
a couple.
Ro and Suze.
We became Ro and Suze, which is by now a kind of a brand name.
Yes.
Because in the 28 and a half years of being together, we didn't appear separately, or we only appeared separately 17 times. It's
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. That's less than once a year.
Yeah.
And for the rest, we work together, we live together, we always were together.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite amazing.
Yeah. And you are, the same year, you build it together, the foundation of
the
Magenta.
Foundation, and it's always been the things we did were totally in sync with who we were. So it was so much part of our life, and especially then when email made the scene and people having an email address and being able to communicate through internet, we were always working. Because it didn't feel like working. It felt like, yes,
and
shit needs to be done.
Ongoing pressure and passion.
Yeah. So, I mean, secretly people thought we were always online everywhere. And that's because people, of course, in the beginning had very little knowledge of how the internet worked.
Thank you, Suzette, for this first interview. It's about 17 minutes.
Wow.
Quite interesting. You put the backbones of the birth of Magenta together.
Yes.
Okay.
And since neither of us has children, it was like our baby.
Thank you. I stop now.
Yes.